Everything's about planning and process. Two other things that introverts are great at. When I'm networking and somebody says something that I didn't expect, well, for me, when I go away and I think through what happened, I don't beat myself up over it. And what I've noticed is, especially when I'm speaking from stage and somebody asked me a question I wasn't expecting, even if I handled it well, there's always an opportunity to handle something new better. So I will reflect on it, just not the same day, because I'm still emotionally connected to it.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I am so excited, and it was so funny. I was talking with this guest. We've tried to bring Matthew on this platform for so long, and I'm so excited we finally got to book him in. A frequent traveler himself is coming here as an internationally recognized consultant, speaker, blogger, author, mentor, coach. Man has created multi-million dollar businesses over five times, and get this, all before the age of 30. His client list includes Fortune 500 companies and has written the book, The Introvert's Edge. So if any of you have been wanting to get into sales and you felt like an introvert might be at a disadvantage, we're going to be kind of challenging those notions and seeing how you can actually have the advantage because of your introvertedness. The man has been recognized as one of the top people putting together small business events, top five must attend conferences by Inc. Magazine. Man's been sponsored by Facebook, GoDaddy, Capital One, Google, City of Austin, a lot of accolades, a lot of good stuff. And what we're really going to look into are what are some of the ways that he's influenced over 3,500 businesses to date using his methods to transform and get more sales in the process. Matthew Pollard, welcome.
Man, I'm ecstatic to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we just talked about you're on the road, you're kind of living the speaker's life, the salesman's life. So what does the month look like and what's been keeping you busy or where are you now?
Well, actually, I'm in Nashville at the moment. I'm speaking at a technology event tomorrow, funnily enough. I mean, if you think about a group that is sales reluctant, my gosh, technology is exactly it, right? So they're used to hitting people with a bunch of jargon and people not understanding it or people commoditizing themselves. So that's, you know, going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. And I love helping people realize that the true definition of sales is to serve, and the best way to serve your clients in a lot of times is to get them out of their own way, because a lot of times the customers, especially these days, they feel themselves far more informed than they ever have been. That doesn't mean they're right, but a lot of times we find it difficult to help them sidestep what they think they know they want and get them to where they actually need to go, because if we come across as salespeople or salesy at all, well then good luck. So that's what we're doing tomorrow, and then I get on a plane, and I know people are hearing this, oh, he's speaking at this event, then he's speaking at this event. There's no way he's still an introvert. There's no way you can change who you are. Introversion is just where you draw your energy from. That is it. So don't be thinking that I'm not introverted. I absolutely am. Actually, from there, I go to Ottawa and then to Toronto and then to Columbus and then to Iowa. And once I'm done with that, then I get to go home for a little bit.
You know, I'm from Ottawa. I don't think you would know that.
I did not know that.
Damn, what are you doing in Ottawa? Is it Shopify?
No, so I'm speaking for YPO. Yeah, so they've got, for those people that don't know, like EO and YPO are great organizations for helping people really grow themselves in a really safe environment. You know, I feel like when you mentioned that I've been responsible for five multi-million dollar success stories before I turned 30, most people don't tell you how lonely that is. And a lot of times joining groups is actually really difficult because a lot of people giving you advice, most people probably know that, a lot of times they're not at the level you are, or they don't get it, or they're just not on your team. And what I love about EO and YPO is that they've been pre-vetted so that you know that they're at your level and they're all very committed learners. So I actually really enjoy, you know, I get to speak at a lot of really big kickoff events. Selling Power magazine just listed me as sales kickoff speaker of the year. So I speak at a lot of really big tech and finance events, but I love speaking for small business events and medium-sized business events. And that's why, you know, YPO and EO are really kind of my favorites to do. They're just a really great active group of learners that actually put to work the ideology that you share with them.
I love that. I feel like I want to expand on a little thing you mentioned, because a lot of people give advice, even on this podcast, you know, we receive a lot of advice, but I feel like you would be someone that's already well equipped and some sort of like questions or methods that you would use to kind of filter out advice that's noise and irrelevant versus things that should be like applicable to you. Do you use any kind of method, or do you have like a mental like filtering system?
Yeah, I feel like advice needs to come with the same sort of currency focus as actually buying something. So a lot of times when somebody will give me advice, I ask them when they applied that advice and it worked. Because what I find is, and actually I'm not going to mention the association just to protect the innocent a little bit, but I remember being in a really high stakes mastermind of some of the best speakers in the world. But there are also people that used to be great speakers that are somehow there still. And so a lot of times when you're in those kind of masterminds, you could be giving advice and everyone's like, oh no, it's about everyone's got to have the opportunity to share. And I'm like, all right, so be quiet. And then everybody else shares. And it's like, well, they've never done this stuff. And then there are other times that you're asking for advice. And there are these people sharing advice that had businesses 20 years ago, or they think that this might work. And I'm always terrified of try this and I think it will work kind of advice, because it's unvalidated. And these days, I mean, the great thing we have is we get to stand on the shoulders of all these amazing people that have done things before. So for me, I don't guess at anything, right? If I'm doing it, I'm doing informed guessing, which is I've spoken to this person or I've read this book, and I don't pick up any books that people haven't actually done it. And, you know, I go through the information and then I say, okay, I'm not testing the principle or the concept. I'm just testing its application in my specific use case. And that makes me feel so much more comfortable whenever I'm applying something. And I feel that, you know, especially for introverts, we have this superpower or disadvantage. When something goes wrong, like we're in a networking event and we say the wrong thing and we ruminate over that night, why did we say that? Well, the truth is that can also be used as a superpower. So for me, I use it as reflective thought. And so whenever I'm selling and something goes wrong or right, I think about that night or the next morning, what's the opportunity? What's the improvement opportunity? And when I'm networking and somebody says something that I didn't expect, well, for me, everything's about planning and process, two other things that introverts are great at. So for me, when I go away and I think through what happened, I don't beat myself up over it. And what I've noticed is, especially when I'm speaking from stage and somebody asked me a question I wasn't expecting, even if I handled it well, there's always an opportunity to handle something new better. So I will reflect on it, just not the same day, because I'm still emotionally connected to it. So I'll reflect on it 24, 48 hours later, and I'll journal it, and then I'll say, that's something I need to come back to. And what I've found is over time, I've got better and better at applying improvements to everything that I do, which has actually not got me to become more extroverted, because I think introverts trying to become extroverts is a recipe for disaster, but actually allowed me to lean into my amazing introverted strengths of empathy, active listening, planning, preparation. But reflective thought, I think, is the most important. And so when somebody gives me advice, or when I'm taking on advice, anytime something goes wrong, I will study like crazy to improve my application of the theory, or to reflect on what I did and look for improvement opportunities. And that's something that I do instead of catastrophizing or ruminating like the average introvert will do. But it's the same skill set. It's just used as a continuous improvement focus as opposed to a beat myself up kind of focus.
Yeah. And I find it interesting. Like, I've been in this industry for a while, speaking to a lot of people, and some of the best speakers are quite introverted. And like, for a lot of people, they're like, no way. And there's a certain style that I've noticed for the most introverted speakers, where it's like, when they come on stage, like, they're very good at connecting with the audience. They're very prepared. They're very methodological in the way that they speak, which makes for some of the most powerful talks I've seen. Now, I feel like I'm seeing some nods, so I feel like I'm not crazy here. I may be picking up on something. And so I'd be very curious to know if this is a trend across that you've noticed as well. And maybe some of the people that are listening that might not realize their introvertedness is a superpower, there must be some key decisions you've made to kind of shift that.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, funnily enough, Ryan Dice was on my podcast. I have a podcast called The Introvert's Edge as well. It's only because I got tired of people talking about introversion like people that were introverted were second-class citizens. I don't believe that. I believe that introverts' path to success is just different to that of an extrovert. And when we embrace that, I actually feel that when it comes to all of these, and I like to use those inverted commas, so-called extroverted arenas, that introverts actually have the edge, because when we can lean into a system and a process and a strategy, we actually do get to lean into our natural gifts. And empathy is absolutely one of those. And active listening is one of those. So, you know, what I find, what Ryan said in the podcast was actually really interesting. He said he used to get really scared speaking from stage, but what he realized is that he got scared because he was worried about what people thought of him. And then when he realized that he was there because people actually wanted his advice, and it wasn't about him at all, it was about the people in the audience and providing real value, he said, well, that I could do. Because for him, that was really about, you know, empathizing with the people in the audience and what they needed and meeting them where they were. And I thought that was really powerful. Funnily enough, Ryan, to this day, he spoke from my stage, and he will not speak on any stage that doesn't have a back entrance because he's not worried about speaking anymore, but he is worried about walking off the stage and getting trampled, hilariously. Yeah. But I will say that for me, one of the comments I get all the time is, I felt like he was speaking to me. I felt like he was speaking to me. And I think that it's because of the same thing. Whenever I walk on stage, I used to think, oh my gosh, I'm scared of being on stage. I'm not comfortable being on stage. And don't get me wrong, like my first stage presentation, you know, the stage must have been 9 foot wide and I must have bounced off that stage about 1,000 times, my hands flying. Surprisingly enough, you know, it came well reviewed because the content was good, you know, but I didn't become, you know, I will say I had great content and I was an okay to good speaker when I started, probably just an okay speaker when I started. And it was only during COVID that I had to do a whole bunch of virtual events, and I was doing like 2 to 3 sales kickoffs a day when during, you know, January to March. And I had to really think about how I held myself, where I put my hands, how to engage the audience in a virtual kind of way. And because of that, it was a whole bunch of practice. And, you know, I got the reps in. And funnily enough, Deborah, who's the operations manager for Liaison Speaking Bureau, they handle the meetings for corporations. She came up to me afterwards. She's like, you got to update your sizzle reel because we booked you because of your content, but we almost didn't book you because of the stage presence. And now you've just nailed that. So what I think that most of the best speakers in the world do, you either have introverts that did what I did when I started, was rest on my laurels of, I've got great content, I don't need to be that great a speaker. And I think that's to, you know, if I could reflect on things, if I could go back 10 years and change that, I absolutely would. I would have focused more on the stagecraft of speaking. And then you've got others that focus so much on the stagecraft, they're not so worried about the content. And I think that's worse because the world's full of people that have read a book and now they're up on stage talking about it as opposed to actually creating. And I believe everyone has unique experiences, unique past backgrounds that perfectly qualify them to help somebody. But once you get past that, I think that's important is to diffuse what people see as introversion, because everyone knows introverts can't speak from stage. Well, okay, that's confusing because if you think about sales and we think about the most well-known sales speaker on the planet, well, that would be Zig Ziglar. Well, he was an introvert. And, you know, I interviewed Tom Ziglar on my podcast and he talks about how his dad kind of had to, you know, recharge after he got off stage, because that's the only difference. It doesn't matter. Like for me, I actually love speaking from stage now. And that's where people, you know, have an issue. They're like, oh, you know, I enjoy networking now, so I must not be introverted. I'm like, I didn't say you enjoyed it or you didn't enjoy it. Like, I love networking. And as a matter of fact, Ivan Meisner, the founder of BNI, the world's largest networking group in the world, is an introvert. Just Google OMG, I'm an introvert, Ivan Meisner. And it will come up because he didn't think he was, didn't realize until later life, until his wife's like, no, you're an introvert. And he had to go and do the test. So a lot of the times we feel like we enjoy something and therefore we mustn't be introverted. And that I actually think is a really bad thing, because for the average person listening that thinks that they can't succeed because they're introverted, a lot of the people that they look up to, they see as extroverted, even though perhaps they aren't. So that's why the Introvert's Edge podcast was so important. But like, let's think about some of the kind of people you would say are naturally extroverted. Like, you've got to imagine David Letterman and Oprah Winfrey are the best people in the world at small talk and therefore have to be extroverted. No, they're both introverted. If you think about, okay, crazy actors like Bill Murray, there's no way someone could be that dynamic and be an introvert. Well, he actually is. And so what we need to do is we need to rethink about what introversion actually is, because the fact is we can learn systems and strategies all the time to become amazing at what we do. We've just got to stop projecting extroversion on people that are successful so that we can actually take a step back and say, okay, I'm an introvert. These people are introverts and therefore I can. And truthfully, in the world of sales, especially, well, actually in corporations in general, we've got to stop putting an artificial glass ceiling on our introverts and going, oh, poor Johnny's an introvert. Like, let's be honest. A lot of extroverts aren't the best listeners. They're not the most empathetic. And I'm not extrovert bashing. The truth is that if a HR organization saw that those were issues, they'd put them through coaching and training to help them fix the problem. But then they say, oh, poor Jason. Jason's an introvert. You know, he's never going to be a leader. He's never going to be in sales. So I'm not saying that everybody listening needs to be in sales, but a lot of people have decided they can't sell and they may need that income to better their lives, or they don't want to start their own business. And because of that, they don't think they can because they can't sell, or they accept subpar performance of themselves because they're like, oh, I don't have that natural gift. So what I'm really about is helping people understand they can be amazing at sales. They can be amazing leaders. And then they can choose if they want to or not. But you can't know that you can't and then make a choice about what you're going to do with your life or what your activities you're going to focus on. And that's where I get really upset. And I remember I did this event, the American Association of Inside Sales Professionals, AAISP, crazily long acronym. And I thought it'd be fun. I did their main stage event and then I did a leadership retreat for, like, we're talking the best in the business, like the most senior leaders in everything tech, everything finance, everything, you know, everything. And I just thought it'd be fun to ask them if they were introverted or extroverted. And instead of putting like a tick box, I just left the field blank to see what came up. And it killed me to see responses like, oh, I was introverted, but don't worry, I'm not anymore. Like it was a disease they had to recover from. Or, oh, I used to be introverted, but now I'm more like an ambivert. And don't get me wrong, like there are ambiverts in this world that, you know, sit in that middle of the spectrum. But most people that say that they got there are an extrovert that went and did huge amounts of coaching on active listening and empathy, or an introvert that went off and learned systems and processes, you know, to leverage their natural strengths. Like for me, when I get up on stage, the moment I get up on stage, I have a very scripted introduction that, because I've become better and more comfortable, has become a little bit more robust. But then I say, so how will I live up to this introduction? I know, let me tell you about Wendy, or let me tell you about Alex. And I go straight into a story because I know the moment I share a story, it activates the reticular activating system of my brain and the receiver's brain, all the audience, and it actually creates artificial rapport because our brains synchronize. And because of that, I'm at ease, they're at ease, and now I feel comfortable. And then try and get me off stage. And because of that, most people would think I was an extrovert.
I think there's a lot of bias towards assuming that the extrovert introvert is what makes the quality of the speaker. But what I've picked up from a lot of the things you're saying is the quality of the preparation for the speak, the fact that you have your stories ready, then you put in the reps, like all of these is the work. And what I find is the worst, and this happens in sales as well, is using whatever XYZ feature that actually isn't a limiting factor to be your excuse for mediocrity.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful statement, actually, because I feel that, I mean, look, a lot of people use their social class, where they grew up, as the reason for why they can't succeed. I mean, let's face it, everybody does it. Oh, but you know, it's different for me because I had bad parents, or the weather was bad where I grew up. I mean, pick your lame excuse, right? Introversion is exactly the same. The problem is that we create, and we were just talking about stories, so I think this is important because for me, you know, a lot of times, so when I speak at small business, I talk about rapid growth. And then when I get into sales systemization, I actually deliver a similar presentation to what I deliver for corporate. And I talk about the power of story and how most sellers, when they look at, or business owners that are trying to sell or think they can't sell, I talk about story as the best way to get our customers out of their own way because it short circuits their logical brain. You speak to the emotional brain, it activates the reticular activating system. People remember up to 22 times more information when embedded into a story. But the truth is, when I come back to the short circuiting the logical brain and speaking to the emotional brain, which is, by the way, the part of the brain that makes the decisions, right? The part of the brain that's the logical processor says, that'll work for me, that won't work for me, I haven't got time for this, hang up the phone or send me a proposal, which, you know, a lot of sellers really love sending these proposals that nobody reads. The truth is they're just trying to get you out of the office because you hit them with a fire hose of information. So I actually share that instead of giving them jargon and thinking your job's to educate them, because you're doing that because you feel like you need to, but the customer doesn't want that. What they want to do is hear a story of someone just like them that you got them to an amazing outcome. And they want to hear that you actually understand the customer. So it's far less about what you did and far more about your understanding of their struggles at the beginning, their outcomes at the end, and the moral of the story, right? People want to know that you care before they care what you do. So the important thing when it comes to storytelling, though, and I always come back to this because I think mindset is everything. I mean, You know, I mean, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader in late high school. I was super introverted. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I only fell into sales because I lost my job. And I mean, it was 93 doors before my first sale. Lots of rejection, lots of getting sworn at. And then I finally started to know what I'm doing. And long story short, I got hit in the head with a glass at this random, uncomfortable event. And I had, you know, about 26 stitches across the side of my face. So then I looked like somebody that was in a bikie gang. And, you know, all of these things could be perceived as things that I wouldn't be able to get beyond. And what I've realized is I'm in charge of my own mind, how I perceive things, what I do. And this brings me back to story. Story short circuits your logical mind. You speak directly to the emotional mind. So if you are telling yourself this amazing story about how you're an introvert and therefore you can't learn these things, again, I'm not saying that you need to be in sales or you need to run your own business. But if you are running your own business, I think it was Peter Thiel that said, look around and if all you see is your computer and you know that's it and you don't see any salespeople, you're the salesperson, right? So if you are in your own business, and I see a lot of people like MSPs and people in finance, they're like, oh, you know, it's such great money in what I do, so I don't need that many clients. What they're saying is I don't want to go out and sell. I don't want to go out and network. I don't want to, you know, speak from stage. And I can't do it because I don't have this gift of gab. It's a story that you're telling yourself. And if you want to tell yourself that story, that's totally fine. Just know you're hiding behind it. You know, a lot of people, when you know, they reach out to me or my team, they'll say, oh, I want to start my own business. And then you realize that they don't actually want to start their own business. They just want to feel like they're not missing out on the entrepreneurship world and the small business world, but the pain's not worth the gain for them. They've just convinced themselves, right? They've inherited that goal from their mother, their father, I don't know, drunk roommate they had in college. Oh, you got to go start a business, right? Like they don't think it through. So because of that, they're telling themselves this story because they don't actually want to take the action. So they're like, oh, I really want to do this. However, and like, that's a really miserable existence. So if you're telling yourself a story that is in the way of you deciding that you're actually kind of happy where you are, or you're not happy, but you're also not willing to take the actions to change it, then stop telling yourself that story and just enjoy your life. But on the other hand, if you're in a situation where you actually want to be a salesperson or you want to be a business owner to have that freedom or that income level, or you want to be a leader or whatever it is, maybe you want to speak from stage like me, stop telling yourself stories you can't. Because the truth is that I believe that introverts especially make the best salespeople, the best networkers, the best public speakers, the best leaders. Why? Because we're thought out, we're planned. And don't get me wrong, extroverts have an advantage at the beginning because they just wing things. And that works a lot of the time. But then they also, a lot of times, walk out going, why did I say that? Silly thing. Or they're the ones getting sued because the salesperson said the wrong thing in the meeting, right? You've got to understand that we introverts are terrible at those things at the beginning. But when we follow regimented process and we lean into our natural strengths, we can be phenomenal at these things. But we have to stop telling ourselves these stories because it short circuits our logical brain and it speaks directly to our emotional brain. It's saying, it's okay, you can't do this. You can't do this thing. So therefore, it's not even worth trying. And the moment you do that, you've lost. I mean, there was a UNC study that talked about the fact that we tell ourselves something between 16,000 and 80,000 things a day. And a lot of those things are ridiculously repetitive. It's the same stuff over and over again, and a lot of it is negative. So if we're not in control of our own minds, the only thing I know for a fact is you'll get off this podcast and you will change nothing.
Damn. I think we got a bit of an intervention for a lot of the people that are listening in, and that's a good thing. And I'd be very curious, since we're talking a lot about story, because I'm hearing you right now, you have the track record, and I'm going to encourage everybody, when you're listening to this, we're going to put some link in the show notes for you to discover more of Matthew's work. He has his book, The Introvert's Edge, and he has this business growth venture, which also allows you to have rapid growth. So we'll have a link to all of this for you. And I need to go into a story with you, Matthew, because as you're speaking to me right now, I feel like you've planned a lot of strategies on how you speak, whether that's on stage or when you're making sales. But I have to say that being an introvert, I would assume that your very first sales or your very first prospectings were probably not as successful. And I feel like there was a lot of adjustments to make. Matter of fact, I feel like there's even a story of you where you had to actually go door to door many times to kind of break the ice, learn the trick of the trade. And I kind of want to go back to those early beginnings. Because if I'm an introvert and I'm inspired right now, I'd also want to make sure that I'm very aware of what's the reality that might be on this road at the beginning steps.
Yeah, absolutely. And truthfully, it's not that pretty. And I shouldn't be the one that I was actually teaching sales, funnily enough. I mean, I shouldn't have been in sales at all. And I mean, that's why I'm so passionate about this. I mean, I actually founded National Introverts Week in America purely because I feel like more people need to out themselves as introverts so that we're not all feeling like second-class citizens. Because, I mean, a lot of people feel like their aspirational goal is to become extroverted, and that to me is ridiculous. And I am angry that I had to find this out the hard way, that we introverts can excel. And that's why I'm trying to do my best to fix this. Because when I was in late high school, as I said, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader. I was super introverted, had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And luckily enough, I got diagnosed with this thing called Erlen syndrome in late high school. And basically what that means is I put on a funny pair of colored lenses, which didn't exactly help me with my confidence, and I could learn to read. Not like everyone else, but I could start the process of learning to read. And it was 2 years of hustle to catch up. I actually got into the top 20% of my state. And remember, I was miles behind before that. But my family could see that I was exhausted. And because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, my family all agreed that there was no way that I was going to stick it out in university unless I knew what I wanted to do. So I took a job at a real estate agency. And before you think I was the guy outselling, I wasn't. I was the guy in the back office doing data entry with a look on my face. Don't speak to me. I'm here to find myself. And it would have been 3 weeks into that job. And my boss pulls me aside and he's like, Matt, I am so sorry to tell you this. Like, we just got a phone call from head office. They're shutting down this premise. You're out of work. I mean, I've worked there 3 weeks. Now, this is in Australia, you know, at Christmas time. Like, I live in the US now. You know, no one's going on big holidays around Christmas time here. But in Australia, it's summer at Christmas time. So we're going off on the 15th of December and we don't come back till the 15th or 20th of January. So, I mean, think about it. Like, for the average person that owns a business that's listening to this, how many people are you hiring, especially if your spouse has been telling you, this is the one time you've got to look after your family, like you've been focused on work all year. Like, you're not hiring anyone. The only jobs that were in the paper, there were actually only three, and they all had these words, commission-only sales, in the title. And for someone like me, I mean, I actually even had really bad acne back then. And like, I struggled to talk to my own friends because I didn't want to be the center of attention because of that. To apply for these jobs was terrifying, but not as terrifying as telling my father, who broke his back 80 hours a week to support the family, who I'd promised that I was going to pay my own way that year, that I was out of work. So I applied for all three jobs and I got three job interviews, and that surprised me. And then I got three job offers and I'm like, wow, maybe they see something in me that I don't see in myself. So I took a job doing business-to-business telecommunications sales. And I remember going into the first day of training with this little bit of quiet confidence. Like, for me, I feel that, I mean, if all three of them hired me, like, they must see something. Well, my trainer put that to bed really quickly. He's like, Matt, we just hire everyone. This is commission-only sales. We just have this saying. We throw mud up against the wall. We see what sticks. I mean, fun saying. And yeah, it's hilarious, right? Until you realize you're the mud. So the thing for me was I did, and this kills me to this day because I can't believe that people did this back then. I got given 5 days product training and not a single second of sales training. And then I get thrown on this road. It's called Sydney Road in Melbourne, Australia. It's like hundreds and hundreds of doors on each side. And I just get told to go sell, which sounds great until you realize no one's actually told you what to say. So I take a deep breath. I walk into the first door and I was actually very lucky because I was politely told to leave. And I say very lucky because the next door I went into, I got sworn at. Then I got told to get a real job, which was always my favorite, right? Because I mean, this was the only job I could get. And door after door, that just kept happening until I got to my 93rd door where I made about $70. And I mean, that was a lot of money to me back then. I mean, I had a part-time job throughout school where I was earning like $200 a week at McDonald's, right? Like, this was actually pretty decent money. But I remember being ecstatic for about 45 seconds and then having this really horrible realization. I got to do this again tomorrow and the next day and the next. And for me, I mean, this wasn't okay, but I couldn't go home and quit again. My father would have killed me. So I was like, all right, I'm not going home and saying I'm out of work, but I'm not willing to accept the way it is. So I thought to myself, and this is what I mean about the stories you tell yourself. Like, I could have told myself sales is a skill that only extroverts can learn. I just have to rely on lady luck, which could have been 200 doors the next day. And I'm like, no, thank you. So what I decided was that sales was a system. It had to be a system like anything else. Otherwise, my year was going to be horrific. So I went to work learning that system. And I was like, well, how am I going to do that? Well, picking up a Brian Tracy or a Zig Ziglar book would have taken me a year to read it, let alone apply it. So luckily enough, YouTube was just becoming a thing in Australia back then. And I literally typed in the word sales system like this was an original idea. And it wasn't. All these videos came up. And I remember spending about 8 hours a day perfecting the step that I was on or learning the next step in the process. And then I would go out the next day and spend 8 hours selling. Weekends, I'd spend 16 hours practicing. And I know this isn't sounding fun to anyone listening. It wasn't. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. And there are smarter ways to do this now. I just didn't know them. But I got better really quickly. Soon it was 71 doors, then it was 46 doors, then it was 28, then it was 19, then it was 8, then it was 3. I got it down to making a sale on average every 3 doors. And I still remember this actually. It was about 6 weeks in, my manager pulls me aside again and he had that weird puzzled look on his face, like the person that just fired me recently. And I mean, I didn't think that I had a relationship with anyone. I mean, I handed my paperwork in downstairs, didn't talk to the boisterous sales reps upstairs talking about how they locked in that deal or how the market's getting harder. And he looks at me and he's like, Matt, we're kind of blown away by this, but we just got our national sales figures. And it turns out you're the number one salesperson in the company. And I mean, this was the largest sales and marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere at the time. And so this still blows me away. So he looks at me and goes, Matt, you can sell. You can manage. I don't know why people think that. Like, why would anyone, just because they have sales skills, mean they have leadership skills? I'm like, I don't know anything about leadership. And he's like, don't worry, we'll give you 20 people. Just mud up against the wall, see if anyone sticks. Well, within 24 hours, my entire team quit. Well, I went back to YouTube, learned how to manage. And funnily enough, that's a system that you can learn as well. So I got really good at it. As a matter of fact, I got promoted about 7 times and in the space of 12 months. And then I started up my own business. And yeah, I mean, long story short, that's how I ended up, you know, responsible for 5 multi-million dollar success stories. It was spinning out of that into my first business, which was in telecommunications. And then now in everything, including national accredited education. So for the people that are listening, like, I didn't exactly strike it lucky. As a matter of fact, if it wasn't for happenstance, I would never be the person I am today. And gosh, I would never have given up the life that I have today. But as the person doing data entry, I would never have assumed that this life was even possible for me. So I needed to be in a position, and that's why I hope that these podcasts help. I need to be in a position to know that I can. And once I'm in a position that I know that I can, then I can choose. Do I want to do data entry? Maybe I love data entry. Maybe I don't. And for me, I didn't. I didn't love it. As a matter of fact, I didn't even particularly like it. But I probably would have been doing it to this day if somebody didn't tell me that as an introvert, these opportunities are afforded to me, or losing my job, which was what I was lucky enough to have happen to me.
The universe nudges us in interesting ways, but we seem to be going in the right direction when we pay attention. Matthew, I really love everything you've done on the podcast today, because particularly you've given permission for a lot of people that might have been feeling they were facing a boundary. And to me, that's one of the key things that I want to be able to do for people listening in, is just realizing that there's so much more possibilities for you to take up some skills that truly make a difference. And of course, I'm speaking about selling with love. Sales is what I talk about all the time, about how it's the best gift you can develop, regardless of the industry that you're in, regardless of the position you're in. It's going to be something that really, really supports you in every endeavor in your life. And so I'm so happy that you're here and breaking down these barriers for a lot of people that might have thought that, well, looks like I have that glass ceiling, as you've mentioned, which absolutely does not exist. And one of the key things you said earlier, which I'll re-emphasize here, because we've had debates about it and it always comes back to the same thing. The mindset is way more important than we think. As much as you like to discredit it because, oh, it's just mindset, I actually need, no, like, it starts there, it's continuously there. And as you reinforce that, that's really what's going to take you to pick up that skill, to reinforce around the rejections that you're facing to keep going forward. And it sounds like you have that resilience in a powerful way, which kind of brings me to a question I love to ask all my guests, because you are on the Selling with Love podcast. So I do have to ask you, what would selling with love mean to you?
So I believe that, as I said earlier, the true definition of sales is to serve your clients. And the best way to serve them is to get them out of their own way. So truthfully, if you've got a product or service that you sell that doesn't benefit your clients, then you really need to sell something else, because truthfully, I don't even want to help you. But if you have a product or service that actually puts somebody in a better position in both either their life, their business, their career, and your inability to help them because you can't sell to them is something you just need to fix, right? The best way to sell with love is to know that you have a product or service that benefits somebody, know that you will not sell it to someone that it does not benefit, and then be relentless in making sure that the people that it benefits actually buys your stuff. And I do not mean selling through bulldog techniques and hard closing. I hate that stuff. but I mean learning how to do things like tell stories in order to engage. And truthfully, I believe that if you start with sales, you've kind of already lost, because if you're an MSP and you're competing with other MSPs in the market.
MSP? Can you explain the acronym for the MSP for people who might not know what MSP is?
Oh, yeah, sure. Managed Service Provider. So people that basically prepare, you know, fix technology inside offices that don't have their internal tech team, or people in finance or people in insurance. Like, the truth is, I mean, you think about someone that goes into a room and it doesn't matter how nice or polite they are, Jason, when you meet them. At the moment they say they sell insurance, it's like your eyes lock and you're like, how do I get away from this person, right? It doesn't matter how great you are at sales if you're commoditizing yourself like that. So I'm a big believer that if you start with sales, you've kind of already lost. But that being said, there is so much you can do in the sales approach, in the way that you handle a sale, that will actually get you to be able to sell with love. Because the problem is, you end up feeling like what you're doing is manipulative if you're using hard closing, if you feel like you're pushing someone to buy, even if the product benefits them, because your inability to separate yourself in the crowded market, so you're seen as a commodity, has forced you to fight on price, and your inability to handle sales the right way because you're spewing out a bunch of jargon rather than using amazing stories that show that you truly care about them, you understand them, and you've delivered this amazing service before, embedded the life of somebody else that you worked with, is what's in your way. So the best way to sell with love is to get out of the commodity box. And if we had more time, we'd talk a lot more about that. I've got a webinar on my website that breaks that down step by step, that says, you know, sales is actually step three. But then also understanding that sales is a system just like anything else. And to truly make sure that this comes from a place of love, I will say this. My publisher hates me when I say this, by the way. You do not need to buy my book in order to believe in yourself and understand this ideology. If you go to theintrovertsedge.com, you will be able to download the first chapter, and I will provide you overwhelming evidence that you as an introvert can excel in the sales space, or as a business owner that has to sell or chooses to sell or should be selling is probably a better word to use. And I'll even break down the full 7 steps of the sales process. And if you do nothing more than put what you currently say into it, you'll quickly realize there's some things that don't fit. Throw that out. You should not be saying that to customers. And I know you think you're doing them a favor, but all you're doing is hitting them with a fire hose of jargon. And because you're hitting them with a fire hose of jargon, they're not going to buy. And that's not selling with love, because they're not going to buy. If your product benefits them, you're doing them a disservice. Then secondly, you'll realize there's some things out of order, which is why you end up talking about price way too soon. And then you'll realize there's some gaping holes. And one of them is going to be asking questions. And I don't just mean questions for questions' sake. I mean the right type of clients, asking them the right type of questions. And yes, I did say the right type of clients, because I believe that everybody should specialize and everyone should differentiate that way. Now, also, telling the right stories. And again, if you are talking about, oh, you know, I sell to everybody, well, the story is really going to have a hard time impacting that person. But if you're very specific around the group that you help and the leads that you attract or the leads that you go after, your stories will nail it. And if you do nothing more than throw out what you currently say that doesn't fit, fix the order, and introduce the right types of stories and the right types of questions, you will double your sales in the next 60 days. And when I say that, my expectation is that you help more people in the next 60 days, because it's not about sales. It's about having the initiative to realize that money isn't a bad thing. Sales isn't a bad thing. For you, you can put all that money in your pocket and spend, and once you've declared the profit, donate it all to Greenpeace for all I care, right? What you want to understand is that businesses, they need money to survive. You need money to survive. Otherwise, you're not going to be helping people for very long. So you must make a sale. But if you make that sale, in my mind, you must make it to somebody that you truly benefit. And that's why I feel like sales process is so vitally important, and getting out of that commodity box is so vitally important. Otherwise, you end up fighting on price, and then you end up working for a price tag it's going to be hard for you to survive on, and you're going to be stuck in that hamster wheel. Or you won't take on that client because you're unwilling to negotiate on price. And all that means is that you end up, you know, ending your business or your sales career. And that doesn't help anybody.
And we're in a world now that people need help more than ever. And if you know you have something that can serve, as you said, being focused on that impact and the difference you make in people's lives, then you go and find the best ways to get that done when you know that it's going to get it done in the right way. Matthew, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I know that we've just touched the tip of the iceberg of everything you speak about. I mean, your track record on how many businesses you've helped, what differences you've made in their lives speaks for itself. And I want to encourage everybody, we're going to put a link in the show notes. There is a webinar for you to understand more on not commoditizing yourself. There is going to be the free copy of the first chapter of The Introvert's Edge. We're going to put a link to that as well so you can pick that up. And just exploring more of everything that Matthew has, including his podcast, you're going to be able to go dive deeper, get informed, and make sure that regardless of how you identify on the introverted, extroverted scale, you're not limited. You actually have tons of things you can learn. And some of the things I've picked up the most, Matthew, from today is just realizing, again, everything is a system. When you learn the system, you perfect the system, you're more effective. You're not held back based on where you sit on this introverted spectrum. You do it with the fact that you're yourself. And you seem to have even an advantage by being an introvert. So if you start having the right mindset, which is something we reinforce so much in this episode, you start realizing that, hey, if you have that superpower, then go out there and learn the system because you'll be so effective. And your story on how you've done it is just another piece of evidence out of the multitude of evidence of introverts that are crushing it, whether it's in business and sales and in life. And so I'm so excited that a lot of people might have an aha moment from this conversation. I know I had a good time and I'm so proud and happy that we finally got this done together. Matthew, enjoy your travels. Thank you for taking the time for being on the show. It was an absolute pleasure.
Jason, it was my pleasure as well. Thanks for having me.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.